Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Grant Afsef of the Kokomo Tribune for Pacers coverage, as well as NBA coverage at NBA Analysis Network. What is up, guys? How are we doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Grant, it's a pleasure to have you on so we can really dive into the Pacers.
Yeah, we got two Pacer experts today, Corey and Grant, probably two of the best you can find out there and on NBA Twitter. But before we get started, just a quick reminder, you can check out the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. But before we look forward to next year, we're going to take a look at last year. Now, Pacers surprised the shit out of everybody. 48-34, lost in seven in the first round of the Cavs. You know, Victor Oladipo, most improved player, really surprised us and took his game to a whole nother level. What were your thoughts on last year?
Well, definitely an unexpected year. I thought they would probably be a little bit better than people thought, but definitely Victor Oladipo overachieved anyone's probably craziest of expectations. You know, it was pretty interesting, too, to see how good they were from mid-range as a team in general. And also, you know, Domantas Sabonis was pretty impressive as well. And, you know, just a lot of interesting things about that team. Like their clutch performance was pretty interesting as well. I think they were like 11-2 in games decided by 3 points or less. It was definitely a good year for them.
Yeah, you're right. They were 11-2 in games decided by 3 points or less. Obviously, Victor Oladipo was the shining stone from last season. I mean, he was tremendous. Obviously, he had a rough couple of years in Orlando, didn't look overly impressive in OKC, and now he looks like the guy. People are already calling him mini LeBron heading into this season. Sabonis showed a lot his sophomore year. Miles Turner is probably the one guy who, because of injuries and just he just has more to his game that he has to develop on and work on. He showed some really good signs, but at times he's had a long way to go still. I think Darren Collison obviously led the league in 3-point percentage last year at 47.3%, I believe. That was surprising for me. Bojan Bogdanovic, I mean, I didn't know what to expect with him playing a lot of starter minutes last season, and he really impressed, especially in the playoffs. He's just a really nagging defender. He's not, you know, a very good defender, but he played with a lot of effort, so that kind of makes up for some of the deficiencies he has. And, you know, that first-round series, it was just a lot of fun. Obviously, won seven games, and I've said this before. I think the Pacers were the better team, but, of course, the Cavaliers had the best player in LeBron James. At the end of the day, that was enough for the Cavs to move on.
Yeah, like you guys said, it was really exciting on multiple fronts. Initially, when you guys got Victor Oladipo in the Paul George trade, what were you expecting, you know, like in terms of at that time? Obviously, it's in hindsight, but what did you think he'd become? Obviously, no one really saw him getting to this level, at least last year, but what were your thoughts when they first got him?
Well, I think my expectation initially was probably to wait and see kind of how he handles a larger role. I felt like since he got, you know, that contract, like at the time, 4 years, $84 million, I felt like they were definitely going to be interested to throw a lot of responsibility at him, and I was interested to see how he'd handle it. And I didn't think he'd be as good as he was last year. I thought he could maybe get to where he was last year, maybe over 2 years, and kind of have like a, you know, a progression to where, you know, he can show that he could potentially be an all-star. I didn't think he was going to be an all-star until, you know, a little bit into the season when he showed he was definitely worthy of it, but definitely wasn't expected.
Yeah, I mean, I was really skeptical at first, of course. And then actually, after the Africa game in 2017, when Victor Oladipo won MVP, I actually remember tweeting out something about how he just looked really confident and aggressive. And after seeing that performance, I just thought if that was the kind of Oladipo we were going to see in the regular season, then the Pacers probably didn't lose the trade after all. And that, you know, MVP from the Africa game, Oladipo, is exactly what we saw in the regular season. You know, he was extremely aggressive, extremely confident, and it looked like he had been the man for years in Indiana, and it was just his first season.
Yeah, the mentality was definitely different, and obviously, like you guys mentioned, the work he did on his body in the offseason prior. But this is going to probably be an easy one, but what was the highlight of last season for you guys for the Pacers?
I think the highlight was – I think if I had to narrow it down, definitely that series against the Cavs. That one's kind of an obvious one. But I feel like Victor Oladipo being an all-star was probably a highlight, as well as him, you know, making the all defensive team, because, you know, they really needed a franchise player. And literally, I think the only thing that was truly important from last season was finding kind of like an identity and, you know, a true top player, and that they got it, and that's big going forward. So I think that's probably the highlight.
Yeah, I think I'm right there. I think the actual highlight is exactly what you said. My personal highlight would be anything involving Lance Stephenson. I mean, the constant antics, I mean, just some of the passes he makes, obviously, he's very up and down, and what you get from one night to the next is always – you can't really guess with Lance Stephenson what you're going to get. But last season, he was just – he was a lot of fun to watch, and even though it was just for 1 year, and obviously now he's in Los Angeles, I always just enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, Lance is always fun. And similar to what Grant was saying, I think the direction of the team is now set, in the sense now you have this cornerstone, and Victor Oladipo taking that step allows you to have an identity of where you're going to go moving forward. So I think Oladipo is just a clear-cut highlight for me. Disappointment of last season, you know, on a negative side, which player or moment were you kind of like, eh?
I think there was some times when, you know, I think when it was probably when Oladipo was out, they really struggled without him. I think they were like 0-6 or something like that.
Yeah, they lost every game.
And yeah, it was rough. You know, that was definitely probably like one of their low lights. I think another probable thing was, you know, not giving Miles Turner enough opportunity to, you know, take that next step, because his usage was very similar to what it was the year before, and his minutes went down because of the addition of Sabonis, since they didn't really play them too much together. He kind of had to take some of his minutes off of the, you know, his average from previous season. And I feel like that was probably the low light, because in a way they built it up to where, you know, before the trade, it was like, this is Miles's team. And, or at least, you know, I felt like he kind of was made to think that with some of the public comments that he made. And I feel like that kind of set him up for disappointment without providing him with the opportunity.
Yeah, for me, it's Miles Turner as well. You make a good point about the usage and how, you know, obviously Sabonis played a big part of last season, and I don't think the Pacers necessarily expected him to be that kind of a vocal point. But, you know, he just didn't look overly impressive at times, and, you know, maybe it was because he didn't get a ton of usage. He still has his tendency, which really bothers me, that when he has like a wide open mid-range jumper, he seems to pump fake himself out of an open jump shot. He just hesitates at times. But obviously, he's been one of the guys putting in a lot of work this offseason. He looks jacked. I know him and Sabonis were hanging out a couple weeks ago. But for me, it was just the lack of a jump that I was expecting from Turner as a disappointment.
Pretty much same thing as you, Corey. You know, I'm a big Miles Turner guy, and I feel like last year I was expecting that jump. And like Grant said, the organization kind of made you feel like this was going to be Turner's team. And Grant, you brought up the usage rate. How much do you think that's on the team, or do you think some of it's on Miles Turner himself, like Corey mentioned, not taking the jump shot and maybe not being as aggressive as he could be at times?
I definitely think it's kind of a double-sided, you know, issue, because there's times where he's on the three-point line as well, where he kind of just hovers and waits for someone like a cutter to come up and, you know, take the ball, and that's not really, you know, if you have an open shot, you should take it, unless, you know, he's being told otherwise, which, you know, obviously we don't know that, but I feel like there are times where, you know, rule of thumb, just, you know, take the shot and, you know, be aggressive. And, cause you can only achieve so much within a certain role if you're not kind of, you know, being aggressive, and you can't let the role dictate your contributions as much as it did last year, because I feel like he tries to be a good teammate a lot, and he kind of takes himself out of their offense at times by doing that. But I do think another thing with the usage too is that, like, it was really important to see how Victor can handle being a star player, and providing him with the usage of a star player was important. So I do think expectations probably internally shifted after acquiring Oladipo, because, you know, obviously draft selection or status or whatever is not the most important thing with him being a number two overall pick a few years ago, but, like, everyone knows his potential from Indiana, you know, his days at Indiana, and he just hasn't been able to tap into it and has never been an ultra high usage guy. So I felt like you know, I felt like it was just a part of the situation or circumstances. So it's not necessarily like a, you know, oh, Pacers did, you know, Miles Turner wrong or Miles Turner was a failure last year. I just felt like the expectations probably shouldn't have been what they were before the season started.
What are your thoughts on that, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I think the expectations kind of cloud the judgment. And obviously, heading into last season, even if the initial plan was for this to be Miles Turner's team, I don't even think, you know, the Pacers brass expected Oladipo to be as good as he was. And obviously, when Victor Oladipo comes in and he's playing the way he does, you have to give him more touches. So obviously, that usage goes up. And then the guys had to play around Oladipo. Whereas I think in the first game of the season, Miles Turner had a pretty big game against the Nets, right, before getting hurt.
Yeah, he did in that game as well, correct?
Right, he had a concussion. I believe he got a concussion that game.
Yeah.
So that also kind of, you know, sets you back because, you know, the opening night, he's having a good night. Oladipo was good. Everybody was playing well. And then Miles Turner misses all that time early. So then the team starts to play without Miles Turner. He's got to get himself back involved. And, you know, not that necessarily is a huge impactor, but it does have an effect on how the team probably played throughout the season because they didn't go into the season, you know, with Miles Turner for the early part of the season.
Yeah, I definitely would say injuries were part of that. But moving on from last season, this year the Pacers are coming in at number 10 in the OTG power rankings created via the staff. What are your thoughts on this at number 10 power ranking for them? Too high, too low, fair? What are your thoughts, Grant?
I think it's fair for now. I think there's some factors that we need to see kind of play out, kind of like last year, before we can kind of put them in a higher tier than kind of what they were last year. I do think Oladipo will be better than he was last year. I feel like Miles Turner certainly will as well, but I feel like we need to see those things before, you know, kind of attributing that in ranking. So I do think it's fair.
Yeah, I think 10 is fair. It also, because of how the teams are lined up, this is the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference with the Sixers and Raptors and Celtics, the only teams above them. I think 10 is fair to start, especially because they got some new pieces coming in. We have to see how that all works out. I also expect Oladipo to take it to another level again, and I'm expecting a big jump from Miles Turner, honestly.
Yeah, I would hope Turner has a nice jump, but I think you guys are pretty spot on. And like you said, Corey, being fourth in the East, I think, is probably as high as they can really get. I don't know if they'll jump the other East teams that unless their injury were to happen or, you know, chemistry is an issue. So I think 10 right now is a pretty good spot for them and see how Tyreke Evans kind of fits in and makes everything work. But talking about additions, we'll start with the draft. Aaron Holiday, 23rd overall. Obviously, he has two brothers in the NBA. Knockdown three-point shooter, a skilled guy. There is some questions about his explosiveness. What were your thoughts on drafting Holiday at 23?
I thought it was a pretty good selection. I think he was on my list of prospects to consider when I was doing some analysis stuff. I think, you know, I liked what I saw from him in a variety of areas. I like his shooting ability. I think he's going to have to improve defensively. I know he got defensive honors at UCLA. But I feel like I don't think there was some habits that he has that are necessarily good for an NBA player. Like, I feel like he's, you know, not to go too deep into it or whatever, but like sometimes he's kind of lazy going around screens. He doesn't really, you know, he's not like, I feel like the mentality isn't to like dominate the sequence, if that makes sense, where, yeah, you know, like he's trying to dictate what the offensive player does. He kind of just goes like through the motions, goes along with the play. And I feel like that's something that's going to have to change at the NBA level since he doesn't have the physical tools to be able to get away with that.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of this signing as well. And obviously in college, Holiday got better and better as he progressed. You know, 10 points in his first season, 12.3 in his third, and his second, and 20.3 last season. I like the fact that he can be an offensive threat, possibly off the bench as like the third point guard. He's a decent three-point shooter. I agree with you on the defense. But, you know, this Pacers team seems to play good team, scrappy defense to begin with. So I feel like when you're playing alongside guys who make defense a vocal point and focus, that it will kind of rub off on Holiday, at least I hope. And I think he's a good upgrade over Joe Young, who's been that third point guard the last couple of years.
What are you guys expecting from Holiday this season? Is he going to see time on the court? Is he going to be more of a developmental year, or is he going to have an impact?
I would expect probably very little from him in terms of, you know, statistical impact or anything, because it sounds like they're just going to roll with their veteran guards, Collison and Joseph, for the, you know, the two point guard spots. And then Holiday will slide in if there's an injury or, you know, something like that. So I don't think I would necessarily set any expectations for him until probably the following year if there's an opening or a clear spot for him in their rotation.
Yeah, I don't see a ton of minutes either. I think he'll spend a lot of time in the G League. And if somebody gets there, I know Darren Collison missed some time last year with a knee injury. So that would probably be if an injury scenario would probably give Holiday some time.
Talking about the second round pick, Elias Johnson, 50th overall. What were your thoughts on this guy?
I think he has a unique skill set. I think he does basically everything you would want in a forward except perimeter shooting. And, if he can develop that, then he could be quite an interesting piece for him because he really embraces attacking the glass as a rebounder. He's an aggressive defender, has a lot of great physical tools. And, I think as long as that jump shot can come along, I think he can be quite interesting.
Yeah, how his jump shot develops will be interesting to see. I do like the fact that he's just he's a hustler. You know, he's 6'9". He can battle for rebounds. I like the fact that he can kind of be that high-energy motor guy off the bench possibly going forward. But, you know, again, I'm not sure how much playing time he's going to get. Obviously, he was a second-round pick.
Moving on to free agent signings, obviously the big one, Tyreke Evans, 1 year, $12.4 million, coming off a career season, another playmaker, kind of takes some of the load off Victor Oladipo, also had a really nice season shooting the three ball, which is something we haven't seen from his career. What were your thoughts on picking up Evans?
I think it's a great pickup as long as he stays healthy. That's the huge question mark because, you know, as you're saying with his perimeter shooting elevating to, you know, a level that we haven't seen from him in his career, and it was very impressive. That's a great dimension to have from a bench scorer and also a plug and play a perimeter scorer next to a guy like Victor Oladipo in a closing lineup or just within the flow of the game in general. I think he's definitely the guy that you want to keep the defense honest. Like for the Cavaliers series, they sent a lot of pressure to Oladipo because they didn't fear anybody else. Like Darren Collison led the league in three-point percentage, and they were fine leaving him. And like that, to me, you can't really surround a player like Oladipo with the role players that thrive at three-point shooting and expect great results if you have someone who led the league in three-point percentage and they won't respect him from that type of philosophy. So I think definitely he's the type of playmaker you want next to a guy like Oladipo.
I was a big fan of the Tyreke Evans signing. Obviously, there was a signing that happened before this that had me somewhat sour, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But I'm a big fan of the Tyreke Evans signing. Fun fact is that he was third in the NBA last year in pull-up threes behind only Steph Curry and
Kyrie Irving, I believe.
Yes. Okay, so I'm glad you saw the stat too. I'm not crazy. Which is impressive because obviously, as we mentioned, he hasn't really been that kind of shooter in the past. Obviously, health is a tremendous concern. You know, the last couple of years, he really hasn't been healthy. So obviously, him being healthy and being on the floor would be a big factor. And like you mentioned in that Cleveland series, the issue was with the Pacers, besides Oladipo, there really wasn't a playmaker. There wasn't a guy who could take over the offense and kind of run the show. Lance Stephenson was probably the second best option behind Oladipo. And, you know, obviously because of how up and down Stephenson can get, it's not really – it wasn't really feasible. And Tyreke Evans is probably what everyone hoped Lance Stephenson would be. He can do a little bit of everything. He can rebound. He can pass. And he can just get to the basket. I think the offensive versatility Tyreke Evans is going to give this Pacers offense will take a load off of Victor Oladipo's shoulders and probably help Victor Oladipo play more loose. He won't have to worry about having to, you know, every possession – have the ball in his hand. He can defer to a guy who can get other guys going and also get to the hoop. So I think Tyreke Evans is going to be really crucial for this Pacers offense going forward.
Yeah, and the Grizzlies guy we had on for the preview, Mark King, was very high on Tyreke Evans and what he did last year. He was super impressed. Other than Oladipo, who do you think is going to benefit the most from the Tyreke Evans signing?
I think it's hands down Sabonis because, having a proficient pick-and-roll ball handler like Tyreke Evans, that's going to be huge. And because last season, he such a high volume of possessions as a role man and having like Lance Stephenson, like there's times where he can be successful in that sort of a role, but he just doesn't consistently make the decisions that you would want. Like he was probably their best pick and roll passer last season, and but it's still not someone that you would necessarily want as your main creator in general for, you know, relying on getting shots within the flow as a big man. So I think definitely Sabonis and those other spot up guys like Doug McDermott and TJ Leaf, they'll definitely, you know, they're perfect pieces alongside a playmaker like Evans, because, you know, catch and shoot opportunities, those are definitely the type of looks that, you know, a guy like Evans can create.
Yeah, I was right there with you on the three-point shooter. I think guys like Bogdanovich, McDermott, and even Miles Turner, obviously he's been getting better at the three-point shot and the long ball. I expect him to be around the three-point line a lot. You know, Tyreke Evans driving and dishing out to somebody at the three-point line just seems ideal. And as you mentioned, Sabonis last year in the pick and roll, the pick and pop, he was really good. He was pretty much automatic from the free throw line on jump shots. So I think all of those guys are going to just benefit from the fact that Tyreke Evans can run the pick and roll, and as well, when he drives to the basket, it will open up those three-point shooters around the outside.
Now on to Corey's favorite signing, Doug McDermott, 3 years, 22 mil. Obviously, known as a shooter, can cut to the rim. There was questions about the contract. What were your thoughts on McDermott signing with the Pacers?
I think it's a pretty good signing because they definitely needed more shooting. My one concern with it is their defense in that second unit. I know a lot of second units aren't great defensively, but I think I need to see how much the athletic improvement Sabonis made over the summer can translate to his defensive impact, because what we saw from Leaf in summer league, while it was just summer league, I wasn't necessarily impressed by his athletic improvement. I feel like he was either similar or slightly slower, and having, you know, a guy who isn't, you know, necessarily the best defender in McDermott, along with a guy who's going to struggle defensively for at least the upcoming season or the foreseeable future until he continues to improve as an athlete like Leaf, and also a center like Sabonis who isn't the greatest of enforcers in the paint or help defenders, I feel like that's probably my number one concern.
I mean, I was with Nick when this news broke. We were at a Sweet 16 and I was flabbergasted. I had to pick my jaw off the ground, because at first the rumor I was hearing was that Will Barton was like the top target. And I was like, all right, we can get Will Barton. I'm cool with that. And it was Doug McDermott for 3 years. And how much money? $24 million?
$22 million.
Yeah. It's just I don't like paying Doug McDermott $7 million a year, because I don't think he should play more than 20 minutes a game. I don't know what you think the minutes for him is. What do you think, Grant, are the minutes to expect from Doug McDermott? Because I think if he plays over 20 minutes, that this is troublesome.
I think he'll probably play the minutes behind Bogdanovich at the very least. And I think – I'm trying to remember how many minutes Bogdanovich played. I think it would probably leave around, 18 to 20. Probably, and I think because he's not necessarily a guy who can probably slide over to shooting guard. So, you know, he maybe a small ball power forward lineup or two with him could create a little more minutes. But I think probably around 20, because, yeah, I just pulled it up. Bogdanovich averaged basically 31 minutes, so that leaves 17 at the backup small forward spot. But I guess there's more to take in consideration, too, because you're not going to play – Tyreke Evans just behind Oladipo. So that takes some of the small forward minutes likely as well, unless you're going to eat into Collison and Joseph's minutes. But it doesn't sound like that's something they want to do. So it's a lot of mental gymnastics when you're trying to, you know, talk out the potential minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I worry about the defense as you do. I mean, obviously this Pacers team needed 3-point shooting. We didn't have a lot last year. It felt like it was just Collison, Bogdanovich, and Oladipo. And even though – and I know I must have not been paying attention. Like, I didn't realize Lance Stephenson only shot 28%, because it felt like he shot every three with so much confidence, and he celebrated every single three that went in. It felt like he was shooting at least 33%. But they needed three-point shooting, so I understand the signing of McDermott from that front. McDermott is also good at staying active on the offensive side, you know, fighting through screens and cutting to the basket. But I'm just concerned about how many minutes he plays. And, of course, as you mentioned, He hasn't been a very good defender to this point. And this Pacers team has been, at least last season, they played pretty consistent, solid defense. I don't know if McDermott's the greatest fit there. And obviously, I don't like the money.
Yeah. Would you feel better if it was a 1 or 2 year deal instead of a 3?
I would just be okay if he was making like under 5. Like if he was making like $4.5 million, like I could live with that a year. I just don't like 7.
3-point shooting's expensive. That's usually what it is. But they also signed Kylo Quinn, 1 year, $4.4 million. Obviously, solid backup, played on the bad Knicks, but underrated passer, has some nice skills to his game. What were your thoughts on bringing O'Quinn over?
I think it was a good signing, but I don't know how much we should expect from him, since it sounds like he's going to just fill Al Jefferson's role as the third center. They could, you know, use some big lineups with O'Quinn and Sabonis on the floor, but that doesn't sound like something that they're necessarily intending to do a whole lot.
I mean, this signing was a nice cherry on top for me to end this offseason. You know, his per 36 minutes, obviously those can be, construed however you want to take it and take it with a grain of salt. You know, he would have averaged 14 and 12 last year for the Knicks in per 36 minutes. I like him as a third center. Obviously, Turner has been banged up at least once or twice the last couple of seasons, or his rookie season, his last season. So having a safety net option isn't bad. And Kylo Quinn is really versatile. You know, he can pass a little bit from the post. He's obviously a solid rebounder. He's good around the basket. I think it's a good signing, especially for what they were looking to get. You know, he might only play 15 minutes a game, even maybe not even if he ends up falling, you know, as that Al Jefferson role, because Al Jefferson really didn't see him that much time last season. But I think it was a solid signing.
Yeah, it gives him some nice depth. You know, like you said, with Turner being banged up sometimes, it's always good to have another big on the bench, especially if there's foul trouble or whatnot as well. But moving on to departures, Al Jefferson, Trevor Booker, Lance Stephenson, Glenn Robinson, Joe Young. Out of these guys, is there anybody you wish the Pacers kept, or what are they going to miss losing these guys?
I would say Glenn Robinson III is one that I would probably prefer to have kept, because I feel like you wouldn't have defensive concerns if he's your backup small forward. Of course, I don't want to go as far as to say like, Pacers should have, you know, kept him over Doug McDermott. I probably will have to see how that defense plays out, because I do feel like Glenn is capable of more perimeter shooting than what he's been, you know, utilized in Indiana the last few years. So I don't think he's the shooter of Doug McDermott, of course, but I do think that, like, if you take all the other things in consideration with, like, his defensive versatility and athleticism and things of that nature, I think if defense does become a concern, I probably would have preferred Glenn over McDermott at the 3. But if defense isn't a concern, then I think it's fine with, you know, whatever they decided to do with that bench unit.
Yeah, so from the emotional standpoint, I'm going to miss Lance Stephenson. But I think as well as Grant, you're going to miss Glenn Robinson. Obviously, he missed majority of last season because he broke his ankle early on, or his foot. And then he got back late. He never really got into a true rhythm, didn't play a ton of minutes in the rotation. But he's a 3-and-D guy. You know, he had that game-winning shot against, I believe, the Atlanta Hawks a couple years ago. I believe he shot like 40% from corner threes last season, or over the course of his time in Indiana. He's young. He's good. I would have liked to have kept him instead of signing Doug McDermott personally. Obviously, they decided to go a different direction. I think Glenn Robinson probably is the one guy you're going to miss because of the defense he could have brought to this team. And then, as I said, from an emotional standpoint, probably Lance, just because it just feels like he has that heart and soul of Indiana. Even though he's gone, we're always going to love him.
We got to get you a Lance Pacers jersey. That's your boy.
I got to get a Lakers one now, right? It's my small one. Get both.
Starters, though, getting the prediction portion, starting 5 on opening night, who you guys got?
I would go with the just the exact same starting lineup as last year, with Collison, Oladipo, Bogdanovich, Thad Young, and Miles Turner.
Same for me. I would go with the same starting 5 as last season.
Same thing here. Now, I do have a question. Do you think Tyreke Evans could get into that starting lineup, or they're going to keep him in that bench role?
I feel like they'll keep him in that bench role unless there's some unforeseen circumstance that kind of, like an injury or something. But even then, I do feel like they're going to need a playmaking presence in that bench unit, because, you know, I don't think I would want Corey Joseph as my main playmaker, and that would kind of leave them, like, I don't know. I feel like with the way that unit is with the defensive concerns we've been talking about, you really need to perform offensively. And I feel like Tyreek's one of the few guys that can get you there.
I'm right there with you. I think Tyreek Evans in the six-man role is probably ideal. I mean, I think Tyreek Evans will probably finish games a lot of the time. But I think him coming off the bench is smart because obviously Corey Joseph running as the playmaker. And then just the other options around, I think Tyreek Evans kind of frees up guys like Doug McDermott, Corey Joseph, and he'll be, obviously, as we mentioned, better with Sabonis in the pick and roll and stuff. I think Tyreek Evans just fits better off the bench to kind of keep the offense flowing from the starters to the bench.
Do you guys see there being any position battles starting lineup rotation-wise, people fighting for minutes?
I don't necessarily see a – like from the starting lineup's perspective of a position battle. I do think – I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how minutes do play out with kind of like their bench players, because Evans is ideally a high-volume minutes guy, and you're going to have to take away from other people with having a full perimeter rotation. So I do think I think that'll be the thing that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I could go like doomsday scenario where somehow Turner doesn't take a jump, Sabonis does, and then we're, you know, in December and we're talking about maybe Sabonis starting over Turner. I don't think that's going to happen. But I agree. I think most of the positional battles you're going to be looking at are going to be coming from the bench unit. You know, maybe Doug McDermott sneaks in and gets more minutes. I mean, TJ Leaf obviously is going to be in his sophomore year. He didn't play a lot last year. He didn't look that good in summer league. But I know he's going to be trying to play for some minutes. There's really not a lot of positional battles on this Pacers team.
Well, I have another question. This is going to be a little bit off topic, but obviously the Pacers are going to have cap space next year. We mentioned they're going to probably be a top four, top five seed in the Eastern Conference. Do you think there's any chance they could make some type of blockbuster trade? Obviously, there's been mentions of like a Kemba Walker. People have even mentioned them in the Jimmy Butler scenario. Could you see the Pacers making some type of blockbuster this season?
I think that's something that they could theoretically do if they really wanted to, but I do feel like they'll prefer to keep their team intact. And they also, they're pretty familiar. I know Paul George ended up staying in Oklahoma City, but they're pretty well versed in the kind of the way Minnesota is having the Jimmy Butler scenario pan out for them. And I don't know if they're going to want to take a risk with an upcoming free agent.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's the chance. I think it might depend on whether or not they want to give Turner and Sabonis big time money. So I think Turner's due big money this offseason upcoming. I believe.
Yeah, he is.
Right. And then Sabonis, I believe, is the year after, or it's probably a team option. He's on his rookie deal. But it depends on if they want to keep both these guys and lock both these guys up money wise. But I wouldn't be necessarily surprised if they decided to move on from probably Sabonis. I'm guessing they want to keep Turner, and I would want to keep Turner as well from the upside point. But I think there's a slight chance maybe they move Sabonis if maybe a guy becomes available that they think can help them win now. But again, I don't see a lot of guys even on this team that are going to gauge that much interest from other teams.
Do you guys think that they are going to end up keeping Sabonis and Turner, or they're going to let one go and just keep one guy? And if they do keep one guy, which guy do you prefer? I know, Corey, you just said Turner, but what are you thinking, Grant?
I think they'll end up keeping both for the foreseeable future. I think it would have to be pretty rough with them on the floor together for them to trade, you know, one of those guys. But I do, if I had to pick one, I would pick Turner because of his, you know, the value he provides to your team defense and also the floor spacing. And I think he has a lot more potential as an offensive threat that we haven't been able to see yet. And I'm really interested to see how his athletic improvements will help him on the glass and just in general, because I feel like if he can take up his production, you know, with those improvements to another level, then I feel like there's separation between the two.
Now, I will say this. Last season, I was on board with trading Miles Turner. There was one point at the season where I'm not like over Miles Turner, but there was a point where he gets in foul trouble a lot of dumb fouls at times. Not necessarily the greatest of rebounders yet. It's a bonus, you know, in second year to me just looked more polished last season. Now, obviously, the usage and everything else, you can take that all how you want. But for me, I think Sabonis definitely outplayed Miles Turner last season from my perspective. Now, do I think that's going to happen again this year? No. But if it was to happen, then I don't know. I may lean towards Sabonis again. But I think like last season in general, Sabonis, I think, outplayed Miles Turner.
Would you agree, Grant?
I think to an extent I would agree. I think it's just tough for me because I guess it depends on the value of their defensive contributions that don't necessarily show up in the box score. Because I looked at Sabonis's numbers last year, and he was legitimately below average in efficiency in every single play type that he had besides transition, and that was like his least frequent. So it's tough to me to necessarily like peg his value, and I don't think he's the greatest of rim protectors either, or you know, like help guys, and he doesn't necessarily force a whole lot of turnovers or have a unique advantage that he brings to a lineup outside of his rebounding. So it's tough for me to necessarily like kind of pinpoint if he outperformed Turner. I do feel like Turner didn't perform at the level you'd like, you know, whether, you know, obviously we talked about the circumstances, and I do feel like you know, there's multiple angles to kind of look at it, but I'd probably give Turner the edge necessarily. I don't know. I feel like they were very close though. Like very and close.
I'm looking at just the offensive rating and defensive rating for both guys last season. And oddly enough, they both have 110 offensive rating, and Miles Turner had a 106 defensive rating to a 107 defensive rating by Sabonis. Obviously that's just one statistic and it depends on which ones you value more. But I mean, it was really close by the numbers.
Yeah, and obviously stats can't get everything in there. But moving on from there, breakout player, who's breaking out in the starting lineup?
Like a breakout candidate from the starting lineup?
Mm-hmm. It could be anybody who just kind of takes a big jump next year from the starting lineup.
I think it's probably the guy that we've been talking about, probably Miles Turner. I mean, I could see Oladipo taking another jump, becoming even better, but if we're talking just a general jump, I'd probably go Miles Turner.
I agree, and I think it's got to be Miles Turner for this Pacers team to secure home court next season. And obviously the East got weaker with LeBron leaving, but they're still, I mean, but aside from the Celtics and probably the Raptors and Sixers, I feel like 4 through 7 is kind of up for grabs. It can really go any way depending on what teams gel more and catch fire. But I think if if Turner takes a jump, then this Pacers team, I think, is just a lock to be a home court team. I think if they have a second option offensively, and Turner is that rim protector we know he is, alongside Oladipo, this Pacers team, I think it gets really scary.
Yeah, he definitely has the potential to kind of create a different presence on the Pacers team, and centers not being that huge in the NBA, having one, especially with that length and versatility, could be huge. I hate to pick the same guy, but I'm going to go with Miles Turner as well. Breakout bench player for you guys.
I'd probably go We already know what Tyreek Evans is going to provide, so he's probably not a breakout guy. I might go with Sabonis, actually. I feel like with his athletic improvements, I feel like he has another level to reach, and I feel like that could constitute maybe a breakout year. It's just tough because there's not a whole lot of options, you know, guys who are like young and like – we'll get a clear-cut amount of opportunity.
I think it's got to be Sabonis. I think he benefits from Tyreek Evans coming in. And then, I mean, he's also going to play a lot with the starting lineup. But I think to Sabonis being in his, you know, now his junior year, he looked really good his sophomore season, playing more minutes and having a better usage than he did in that first year in OKC. And obviously, like, I just like the fact that, you know, him and Turner, them working out together too, I'm interested to see how they look on the court together more so. But for me, I'm going to think it's just be Sabonis as the breakout bench player.
Yeah, I think looking at the bench and guys who are actually going to see rotation minutes, it kind of has to be Sabonis. And he's only 22 years old. And like Grant was mentioning, the offseason work and everything going on with that, I think Tyreek Evans will boost him too, like you said, Corey. So I'm going to go with Sabonis as well. But talking wins, best case scenario for the Pacers.
I think a best case scenario would probably be over, you know, within that 50 to 55 win game range and being a top four seed. It's tough to say three because, you know, you have your Torontos, Bostons, and Phillies, and, you know, I think they'll probably be competing with, like, Milwaukee and maybe a team like Washington for that fourth spot. And I think probably anywhere minimum that fourth spot up is probably the best-case scenario.
Best-case scenario would be them somehow getting the three seed. But I think it's realistically going to be like the four seed and, you know, somehow running the, you know, running the tables in the playoffs and getting to maybe even the conference finals, and definitely the second round.
Yeah, I have 53 wins as best case scenario, like you said, maybe getting the 4 seed, maybe the 3 seed if someone were to get hurt or banged up, or maybe Philly is missing some of the pieces that they deal with injuries. Do you guys think, I know, Corey, you just mentioned the conference finals. Do you guys think it's realistic for the Pacers to get to the conference finals and maybe even not a best case scenario? Who do you think would be the number one team to match up with in the second round for them to have a chance to go forward?
I think they have a somewhat of a chance, because I think there's a chance, you know, as we've been saying, Oladipo takes that next step. Again, I think Turner, if he takes the next step, could really help. But based off kind of what we currently know about their team, I do feel like they have a good chance of being able to reach the conference finals. But I do think that it's tough to determine matchups, because I feel like they would struggle against Philadelphia unless Turner really has improved, like, physically to the point where, you know, he can handle Embiid. He's just a different monster, Embiid, with, you know, how physical he is and how big he is. It may take another, you know, like more progression for Turner to be able to comfortably check him for a whole series. So I think Philadelphia would be kind of tough. I feel like Boston would be just tough in general for anybody, because they have so much talent and their spread lineup capabilities are pretty powerful. I think Toronto would also be tough for that same reason. And obviously an elite small forward will be hard for Indiana to match up with, since, you know, they have Bogdanovich and McDermott as their forwards. And I think Milwaukee could be kind of interesting. I think Thad Young can do a solid job on Giannis, but I think they would be, with, you know, more perimeter shooting now on their roster, I think they'd be kind of tough too. But I think they match up relatively well with all of them. It's just that I don't know if they have like a distinctive advantage over, per se, any of them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And also, my best case prediction for record would be 52 wins, by the way. The two teams that fear me the most in the Pacers matchup would be the Bucks and the Sixers. One would be Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I just don't see necessarily how those two guys get locked up unless, as you mentioned, Turner takes a giant jump. And then, like, Antetokounmpo, that he did a really good job last year guarding Antetokounmpo. And obviously, anytime you're going against a superstar, you're really not, you know, taking them out of the game. You're just limiting them. And I think if Antetokounmpo takes a step, which I'm expecting him to take, he would just be a lot for the Pacers to handle, especially with the three-point shooting they added around him this year. I don't necessarily fear the Raptors as much. I don't know why. Even though they got Kawhi, I still think that team's kind of weak. And I still think because of where, you know, Ibaka is in his career and Valanciunas, I think if Turner takes a jump as a bonus, that's somewhere that we could really beat up that team. And then, of course, the Celtics. I mean, they're going to be ridiculous to play no matter who's going up against them, because of how switchable their defense is going to be. And if everybody's healthy, their offense is just really tough.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And like you guys said, I think Miles Turner taking a jump is going to be the biggest factor in what they do in the postseason. On a negative note, though, worst case scenario?
I think a worst case scenario would be like I think it would have to be dependent on injuries. Like if Oladipo or Evans were to get hurt, and then they really would be, you know, kind of hurting for playmaking, that could really damage their overall capabilities as a team. And I think it's tough to necessarily pinpoint how that would kind of lower their overall win count, but I think it would probably be lower seed sort of numbers if they had injuries. Or I just don't see chemistry problems with this team, because they had such strong chemistry last year, and the new additions kind of know what they're getting with their role. So I think it would probably have to be injuries that would cause a worst case scenario and would lower them in the standings to be like a 7 or an 8 or a 6 seed or something in that range.
Yeah, worst case scenario for me would be one of these guys missing time due to an injury, and mainly either Oladipo or Miles Turner. I think if Miles Turner has like another concussion, for example, then it becomes really worrisome. I think that'd be his third already. So if those guys get hurt, obviously they're probably slipping the conference. And if this team gets in, you know, as like, I think 45 wins, probably my worst case scenario in wins, and they slip in as a 7 seed, then they're pretty much bound to get bounced in the first round. So I think that would be my worst case scenario.
Yeah, pretty similar to you, Corey. I think worst case is 44 wins and, you know, Oladipo were to go down, or Tyreke Evans, or there's just some type of injury and everyone's kind of banged up. They still get in the playoffs, but they get a bad matchup in the first round. But actual predictions for the season, what do you guys got?
I think actual predictions, I think they'll make it. I think they'll get around 50 wins. I'll go in terms of a specific number. I'll go 50. And then I'll say they probably make it, I'd say, to the second round of the playoffs. I would not be surprised by Eastern Conference Finals, but I would like to see a few things before necessarily making that my prediction.
Yeah, the Vegas over-under for the Pacers is 47.5 wins. I'm going over as well. I'm going with 50 wins. I think a second round a playoff appearance is likely. Not sure whether or not they get, you know, past that. I'm not sure who they're going to, you know, match up with in that scenario. I think the second round has got to be at least the goal, get one round farther than last year. Yeah, that's my actual prediction, 50 wins in a second round appearance.
Yeah, I think 50 wins is about right. I think they'll probably get in the second round, long as they don't get a bad matchup in the first round. I think you could still end up matching up with a team like Milwaukee or even Washington to some extent isn't a team you want to necessarily see having Bradley Beal and John Wall. But I think 50 wins in the second round should be the goal. Now, on to the most important question of the show, the truth. What emoji represents the Pacers for you?
That's an interesting one. I think that's a really interesting question, honestly. I think I actually don't even know how to answer, honestly. I think I'd probably go with I'm trying to think of which ones there even are. I'd probably go with a smiley face because they have such great chemistry and they're fun to watch. That's probably the one I'd go with.
I'm going with the guy with the sunglasses. This is just a calm, cool, collected team. They seem to all like each other. Obviously, Sabonis and Turner worked out. Victor Oladipo's been in the gym since probably the day after they got eliminated. Everyone slept on them last year. I mean, I think I only predicted them to win like 34 games last year. Like, I didn't even expect this team to be that good at all. And obviously, they won 48 games. And this year, my expectations are a little bit higher. But I just like the fact that this Pacers team is back to being kind of just underdogs.
For me, I'm going to go with the muscle emoji, you know, the guy flexing, because I feel like this team last offseason, this offseason, so much has been talked about is they're working on their bodies and whatnot. And I think Miles Turner and what he does in this offseason is going to be big on his development this year. But league pass wise, where do they stand 1 through 10?
I definitely think they're higher than last year's 30th ranking, I believe, from Zach Lowe. I think that's who gave him the 30.
That's rude.
He said they were going to be the most boring team, and definitely not what I thought. But, you know, I 1 through 10, I'd probably – you know, I think they're going to be pretty darn high. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of fun elements to that team. So I'd probably go with – trying to think of who else I'd have, honestly. Like, the elite teams are always fun to watch. But I feel like Indiana could be more interesting than some of these other ones. So I'd probably go around 5.
5 for the league pass rating?
Oh, a league pass rating. Oh, I meant overall. Sorry, my bad. I'd probably go with a 9 or a 10, honestly, because they're that fun to watch.
For me, it's going to be a 10. It's my first 10 I'm giving out on this.
No way. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think a 9.5 was the highest before this. But for me, it's a 10. I've watched every Pacers game. I mean, I've missed one or two. Don't get me wrong. Please come up. But I've watched pretty much every Pacers game the last 3-4 years, and I don't see that changing this year. If anything, I think it's going to pick back up for me. This is going to be a really fun team to watch. Obviously, there'll be some good additions. And, you know, between Oladipo and Miles Turner, I think these two guys are going to be must-watch to see next year.
Yeah, they play some really nice team ball. They're just kind of an exciting team. And it's funny, like you said, Grant, that Zach Lowe ranked them 30th. And then think about it, last year, they were fun to watch. I think they'll be even more fun with Tyreke Evans. I have them at an 8.5. I think they're going to be one team in the East where they're also in a lot of competitive games, it feels like. There's not really a ton of blowouts when you think about the Pacers. So I think 8.5 is a nice rating for them. But what TV show would you watch over the Pacers? Obviously, it's a hypothetical gun to your head type of question. You know, usually you'll use your favorite TV show here.
Honestly, I don't even really watch TV for the most part, sadly.
It could be another sporting event too, if you like another team, college, you know, hoops or football or something along those lines too. People have used that.
honestly, they're my main one, so it's kind of tough to pick another thing over them. But maybe if I had to, I do have tickets to the Suns this year, so maybe if I had to go to one of those games instead of watching a game on TV, that would probably be my one thing.
That works. For me, it is Game of Thrones. It's one of the only. It's one of two shows that I watch live weekly when it's on TV. And obviously, it's going to be the final season come April. I mean, the season will be over, so I really won't have to worry about that, right? But that's probably the only show I would watch over the Pacers. And even still, it's probably be playoff time by then, so I don't think I'll be skipping.
Yeah, and the last season of Game of Thrones, I feel like it's just going to be like one long-ass movie. Like, I just...
Hour and a half per episode, I believe.
It's going to be like a cinematic experience for every episode. So that's a great pick, Corey. I'm going to go with Blacklist as the show that I just started back up watching. You know, I don't watch it live or anything, but it definitely has an interesting plot line, some different plot twists and whatnot. So very interesting. But any final thoughts you guys want to get out on the pace before we get out of here?
I think we pretty much covered it all. I think that's it.
Shout out to Nate McMillan, who did a tremendous job last year, too. I was really low on him after his first year in Indiana, the Paul George and everything else that happened. The season was kind of just a mess, and I wasn't really high on him. And last season, he really impressed. He got this team unified really quickly. And obviously, he knew Oladipo was a star, and Oladipo really took to McMillan. Obviously, he just got an extension, too, I believe, with the team. So for me, just a shout out to McMillan for the job he's been doing. And I'm looking forward to what he does, you know, over the next 3 years of his contract.
Yeah, that is a great point, Corey. I feel like Nate McMillan wasn't really talked about, but he did a great job last year, especially going into the season, the Pacers being such underdogs to even make the playoffs and having the season they had. But Grant, big thanks for you hopping on. Really appreciate it. Tell the people where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, my full name, at Grant, AFSETH. I do some contributing at NBA Analysis Network with Pacers analysis stuff. I have a weekly column in the Kokomo Tribune covering the Pacers. And I started a contributing role with OKC Thunderwire doing some Thunder stuff that probably won't interest Pacers fans too much because of a certain guy who wears number 13. But, yeah, you can find me on those places.
Appreciate it, Grant. Like I said, big thanks for hopping on. Corey, always a pleasure to talk hoops with you. Finally into the top 10 now. But as always, you can check out all the previews, the other 20 we did on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.